So hello to everyone online, hello to everyone here. The title for this talk is Moving Borders. Moving Borders. In this ever-changing landscape of karma, time and space, name and form, cause and effect, are always on shifting ground. We all know that there are wars going on right now that involve borders. There always are, and it's heart-wrenching and painful. My own ancestry is on one side of my family. It was Russia for a while, and then it was Ukraine, and now it's Russia. I mean, now it's Ukraine again. And maybe it's, I don't know whose hands my ancestral home is in now. But we all feel this intimately, this crisis of borders that are always moving. In Zen, the borders that we make begin right here in our mind. The lines that we draw. Sometimes with great emphasis, and sometimes without even being aware of it. We create borders, demarcation zone. There's a koan that I'd like to bring up that relates, I think, to very much to this situation of borders. It's from the Transmission of the Lamp, an old collection of koans in Chinese history. And it's titled Long and Short. Once a monk drew four lines on the ground in front of Master Ma Tzu. The top one was long, and the three below were short. He asked, "You may not say that there is one long line and three short ones. Please, what can you then say?" So I'm going to take a little detour for a moment and talk about this famous Zen master Ma Tzu from Tang Dynasty China, probably the most famous Zen master after Huainan, sixth patriarch. He lived in the 8th century China at the height of what most of us probably don't know much about. It was called the An Lushan Rebellion. Have any of you heard of this? Yeah, a handful, yeah, a lot of you have. I had heard of it and I had read about it, but I hadn't realized the enormity of this rebellion. It was probably the biggest human-generated catastrophe in our history, wherein it was estimated that something in the order of 36 million people 36 million people died. At that time, it was believed to be a sixth of the population of the world was decimated by this rebellion. How did it begin? I'm on Wikipedia doing a little research. And this general, this old general, An Lushan, was disgruntled that he hadn't been favored as he thought appropriately. A line is drawn, and all that tumbled after became known as this An Lushan Rebellion. Of course, I'm grossly simplifying stuff I don't know the half of. But generally, this is where lines are drawn, is in somebody's mind. And it gets reinforced and reinforced and reinforced, and then gets moved according to the pawns of war, according to the struggles of our own minds. So this koan, long and short, wherein somebody, a monk, comes up to Master Matsu and he draws one long line and then three short ones. This is metaphor. One thing that I've learned from living with someone who grew up in mainland China is that when there is oppression, nobody can speak freely. So the language of metaphor becomes common currency. The language of reading between, or reading what is in the spaces between what is said, that's where you get your information. So to us, as Westerners, reading this koan, it seems so obscure, maybe even like a parlor trick of a question. But we can, when we consider the context that these people lived in at that time, we can look at this as commentary on a very dire human situation. My husband told me that, you know, anybody in China who reads the news knows that you can't trust anything that's written in the news. The way you understand what the news is by looking at what's not mentioned. Mm. By looking at who's sitting next to whom. By looking at the lines that are drawn, rather than what's said about them. So in this koan, the monk is challenging the master, saying, you may not say there is one long line and three short ones. Well, how can you respond then with something that really touches the truth? This language of metaphor becomes a means of survival, a means of exploring what is essential and how to live. Words dig the trenches of those lines deeper. Bringing up another war that's going on in Ethiopia, there was last week there was a peace accord that was remarkable for the fact that somebody is finally paying attention to this war that has killed upwards of 500,000 people in the 2 years that it's been going on. So the African Union and International Peacekeeping Association came, and the African Union hosted this event of a peace signing deal between Tigray region of Ethiopia and the Ethiopian government. It was a remarkable event. However, it was had a lot of holes in it. And one of the most frustrating, I was watching it live as it was broadcast, and they had this, what do you call it, where people can type in comments alongside it. I really, really wish they hadn't. I really wish they hadn't. Because here is this momentous, very difficult work that these diplomats are trying to do to broker peace. And what's in that commentary? It's just one rant after another. Who's to blame? Where are the line? Let's draw the line here. Let's draw the line here. And it was endless, endless. So long and short, haves and have-nots. You people are like that. We're like this. This is a big problem. The borders that we make and remake and try to reinvent. In a provisional, limited, changeable point of view, there have to be some borders. We have to find, they say, good fences make good neighbors until they don't. So this is not to say that we can somehow in some utopian society exist without borders, no. But they are always provisional. Have any of you seen this on online? They have this fast forwarding, a fast sort of visual synopsis of changing borders in the in Europe and in the scope in the space of, I don't know, 1,000 years. Is it like that? You can see how wildly changing the borders are everywhere. Constantly changing. I was talking to my aunt yesterday, and she's almost 90, and she was despairing about the condition of the world. And she said, I thought we were getting better. And my response was, what goes up must come down. Which doesn't mean to suggest that we do nothing. Far from it. Far from it. But we always, you know, as Zen students, we have to look at who makes borders. We do. We all do, all day long. All day long, every one of us. A look at what is mine is a border. What is yours is a border. There may be disagreement. More borders. So many borders. You can't see for anything for the sake of all those borders. Where do we draw the line? Where will we not go? Where do we decide that we will not go? I'll give you a funny example, just to provide a little lightness to this exploration. Just the other day, I think that in our household, there is this borderline that is always going on about food. So just the other day, I was opening the refrigerator looking for that leftover soup that I could maybe expand to make a meal for our family. And I'm looking at all these containers. I see something that looks kind of soupish. Already in my mind, there's a border. There's a line that I've drawn. What looks like soup? What doesn't look like soup? It's a silly thing. But it has some incredible ramifications. So I see this container, it has something soupy in it. So I check and see if it's any good anymore. Take a taste. Tastes awful. I throw it in the garbage. And then a short while later, my daughter Tasha comes in and says, where's my miso pancake batter? Oh. But my mind was so had created this line, soup and non-soup. My taste buds were influenced by what my mind had created. Isn't that amazing? As soon as my daughter said, "Oh, you know, that this pancake batter," I remembered, "Oh, sorry, I just threw it out." You know, because even my taste buds couldn't taste what it was, because I had made a line. This is, I'm looking for soup, this is not soup. Therefore, it's no good. It's really extraordinary. So extraordinary. To tell a story, however small, is to create a border. Create a border. How do you tell a story that doesn't create a border? We have a koan for that. And staying with Ma Tzu, this great Chinese master, it goes something like this. When Ma Tzu was sick and was asked how he felt, he replied, "Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha." So, again, here is the metaphor, the poetry of Zen, shorthand. But this sun-faced Buddha is a way of describing absolute world. A sun-faced Buddha lives for 10,000 years. A moon-faced Buddha lives for just a single day or night. So here we have, in this metaphoric language, a presentation of the absolute and relative together. How is your venerable health today, Master Ma Tzu? Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. Both together. The border war that no one talks much about, but we do here in Zen training, is the border of I, my, me. How are we grasping onto our story, our borderline? Sometimes it's with some rigidity, even without realizing it. We may say things like, "I'm taking a stand," or "I'm sticking to my guns." I mean, talk about language and the violent implications. These have effect on us, the one who recites them, and the hearer, or the one who hears it. "I'm sticking to my guns," or "I don't believe in dot, 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 dot." I remember one time somebody asked the Master Sungsan, "Do you believe in God?" And Sungsan said, "Of course." And I don't remember exactly what he said, but the import was that, "You believe, I believe." Don't make anything in the mind. That is where we start, moment by moment by moment. As soon as I might say, "I don't believe you," or "I don't believe that," as a practicing Zen student, I notice it. And then let go. Let go and begin over again. So So on one hand, you know, the border war that we create with our own language is something that's happening all the time. Sometimes it's done with this kind of rigidity. Sometimes there is a kind of, we have to have some compassion and patience with ourselves and others in this regard, because we are inevitably rattled by what's going on in the world, in our relationships, as we're trying to get our bearings in our own life, and we're trying to, you know, find some grounding. It's almost like these kinds of stakes in the ground or lines in the ground that we're drawing are a way to, for us to feel stable. It's a false or an impermanent stability that we're actually landing on. If we realize that it's impermanent, that it itself is not real, then we can find our balance. The antidote, the practice around borders, shifting borders. Let go. Begin again. Erase the lines that have been drawn. Erase them all. Are you still standing? Probably. Are you still strong? Sure. Sure. Let the energy settle down to your center. And you can feel your strength here. Begin again. Let go, begin again. My son-in-law, Goitam, you know, he was, he and all of the people that he's been talking with from Tigray are in despair, and they ask that perennial question, where's God? We're good people, we're trying to do the right thing. We want peace. In my mind, I just translate that word, God, as don't know mind, before thinking mind. The vast unknowable. Vast unknowable. Why is this happening? How can we find peace? So, you know, I'm kind of mom for Goitam, stepmom, a mother-in-law. And so, but sometimes I just can't help it, end up being Zen person. And I told him, I said, Goitam. And I touch him at his heart, and I say, it begins here. You can always find it right there. You make peace right there. And that's a lot to do. I have another Matsu quote. A monk once asked why the master Matsu maintained his teaching of the mind is the Buddha. The master answered, because I want to stop the crying of a baby. The monk persisted. When the crying has stopped, what is it then? Not mind, not Buddha, was his answer. So in our practice of Zen, we talk about these three aspects. Attain substance. This is before thinking, before Buddha, before mind, before anything. Then we can see the truth, always changing, 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 no order. We see it when it's there. We see it when a baby cries. And then we come to our fitting function. You know, hug the baby, give the baby something to drink, take care of the baby. Substance, truth, and function. There is always a new, other way to live. It isn't the one that just happened. It's this one happening right now. I'll quote another eminent teacher, first stanza of a poem from Emily Dickinson. I dwell in possibility, a fairer house than prose, more numerous of windows, superior for doors. Like that. How do we break down borders, either self-created or those built by others? Ha! First course. Open the closed fist of tribal thinking, of isolated thinking. Then help the world. As Hua Do, as questions that we can keep always in our navigation of this territory. First one, what is this? Are we truly interested and willing to investigate that question? What is this? Or what am I? Are we truly willing to open up the borders of our identity? Then what? Then listen. Capital L. Listen. Listen carefully, closely. Then it's easily possible to love and respect all that you meet. Thank you for listening.